Right, give me a 1, 2, 3 in whatever language you choose.
1, 2, 3.
Welcome back to QAV, Tony. This is episode 713, 26th of March, 2024. How you doing down there in Sydney, Tony?
Good. Well, yeah, it's a lovely day in Sydney. We seem to have gotten past that really high humidity phase of summer, so it's good.
It's cold and rainy in Brisbane at the moment, which is perfect. I'm loving it. Loving it, Jerry. Loving it.
You and Alex, she loves the cold bit weather too.
I started reading this book over the weekend, something about highly sensitive people, how to deal with highly sensitive people, because Chrissy keeps telling me that she's a highly sensitive person and that Fox is a highly sensitive person, and I didn't even understand what that meant. I had to ask her a couple of weeks ago, what does that even mean, really? So anyway, I've got this book and I started reading it. And the beginning of the book is a checklist, like the psychopath checklist. It's like how to tell if somebody is a highly sensitive person. So I did the checklist thinking I would score very low. I scored really high on it. And one of the questions was, do you get really irritable when you're either really, really hot or really, really cold? And man, you don't want to be around me when it's hot and humid. I get really irritable, as Chrissy will attest. You know when your skin starts to get prickly, and like,
yeah.
So that's why I have to sit in aircon.
I must be highly sensitive too, because I don't like it either.
I think you probably are. I went through the end, and I was like, oh, holy shit. You know. Well, it's like, do you get very emotional over music and art and all these sorts of things? And I think I mentioned to Chris, he goes, yeah, I know that. And your mother knows that. Your mother's been telling me forever that you're a highly sensitive child, but you basically learnt to dampen it or control it, you know, and, you know, mask it or whatever. So, because I think most people who know me would not put me down as being highly sensitive. But that's...
No, I wouldn't have done that. But just hypothetically, send me the book so I can deal with it before next week.
I will do that. Tony, speaking of highly sensitive, according to the Financial Review, Chanticleer, we should be highly sensitive about... not be highly sensitive, I guess, about expensive stocks. A Chanticleer article from March 22nd, why ASX investors may need to get used to expensive stocks. ASX-listed stocks have never been this highly valued. But one strategist says that's because companies have never been this well run. At the end of every year, this column pulls together a list of the good, bad, and ugly of corporate Australia. Maybe it's the cynic in me, but it's always easy to find the stuff-ups and missteps. Examples of really great Australian management often seem few and far between. But new research from UBS strategist Richard Shellbach raises questions about whether we judge Australia's corporate sector too hard. He argues the fact that stocks have never been as expensive as they are now in large part reflects the fact that corporates are producing higher quality earnings than they used to. While Shellbach says valuations do not deserve to go higher, even when interest rate cuts arrive, he argues that local investors need to get used to valuations settling higher than they have in the past. Says the ASX 200, excluding resources, currently trades at 18.5 times forward earnings, which is 40% above its long-term average of 13.5 times, but 12% above the previous peak in May 2007, just before the global financial crisis. So what do you think about that, Tony? Do we have to get used to more expensive stocks, or is he just looking in the wrong part of the stock market?
Well, I guess, first of all, thanks for pointing it out. And I did some research onto it once I saw your article. And I went to a site called Market Index, and they have a whole lot of long-term averages for the market, and they graph them. And one of them is PE ratio. I wasn't able to tell whether it's the forward PE ratio or the trailing PE ratio on Market Index, because it does differ from the stats you read out there. Differ in number, but not different in trend. And I've always thought the market average PE ratio was 16, and that's what market index is saying too. So that could be the trailing PE ratio. But either way, yeah, the market's pretty high at the moment. I think market index has got it at about 21, 22, which is very high as an average PE for our stock market. So a couple of points. Yeah, I think you need to be a little bit worried about the market when it gets to this kind of territory. I don't think it's, according to market indexes graph, the highest, but it's you know, in probably the top, it's in the top bracket of highest PE ratios. But, you know, I'm always really wary of regression to the mean. And it historically, the market doesn't get much higher than this before it starts to come off. So it may go sideways for a while. It may keep going up and then crash. But the risk of regression to the mean always increases the higher and lower you are from that average. So yeah, I think it is a time of concern. But if I look at the long-term graph, and this one goes back to 1980 and it's available on Market Index, it can take years and years and years for that regression to the mean to occur. So sometimes, like for example, in the 80s, or the first half of the 80s, it took at least 6 or 7 years for the market to reach a high, and then it crashed in 87. Sorry, to come from less than the market average to be more than the market average, and then it crashed, and then it took another, just guessing here, about 10 years to get back into overvalued territory. So it can take a long time for these regression to the mean events to take place. But yeah, surely if you're above the market average, it's not going to double from here. That would be outside of anything that's happened before. And it's more likely to regress back to about 16. But whether that takes a long time, whether it happens naturally and the market goes sideways for a while as earnings improve, who knows?
Well, as Jonathan pointed out in our Facebook group today, if the market is expensive, why are so many companies appearing in the buy list? And, you know, somebody made the suggestion last year, middle of last year, that I should start charting in the weekly buy list how many buys and sells and Josephines, which I have been doing. And, you know, so I've been doing that since the beginning of September last year. And when I look at that, the trend line's actually going up for the number of buys in our buy list. The trend line for sells and Josephines is going down over that, what did I say, 6 month period.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got more stocks appearing on the buy list now, which means, you know, to do that, they need to be reasonably priced by our metrics. So how do you pass all of those things together?
Well, the buy list has always had stocks on it. I've never not been able to find a value stock in a share market. So I think that's the first thing to note. And it always tends to have sort of 50 to 100 stocks on it. So whether it's a bull market or not, even during the GFC, there were plenty of things to buy at a cheap valuation. Although sentiment was against them then, I guess. So yeah, that's always going to happen. And I guess the point I should make is, even if the market is overvalued or undervalued, I still, it's just business as usual as far as I'm concerned, because there are always value stocks, just as there are always growth stocks in the market. So I've never had a problem not finding something to buy. As for more buys now than sells, that's a good thing. It certainly bears out in my portfolio. I've certainly had lots less trades in the last 6 months. So the market is less volatile. But I'm not sure whether that has any sort of bearing on the valuation of the market at all.
I made the point when I was doing a blog post yesterday looking at our chart that it seems to me that we're in a good period for value investing. There's more stocks appearing to be value buys for us than there have been in the last 6 months. So we seem to be moving into a value cycle, is the way that I read that. If there's more value available than there was 6 months ago. But so I guess when he says stocks are more expensive, it's not across the board, right? There are still lots of value appearing, and they're probably the stocks that are unloved or not getting attention or whatever it is. As we know, out of the 2,500 stocks on the ASX, not all of them get an equal amount of attention.
No, correct. And that could be the reason why there's more value stocks now, because if everyone's buying large cap stocks or you know, momentum investing and following tech stocks or whatever that are doing well, then, yeah, it's going to leave the value stocks a bit more unloved.
Well,
but I guess my point, and I guess the point is that value investing doesn't change during the cycles, but we're still bound by the market. If the market crashes tomorrow, value stocks will go down.
Yeah.
The difference in my experience is the highly valued stocks will fall by, you know, half to two thirds, and the value stocks will fall by 20% type thing.
We hope.
We hope, yeah.
And not,
but that's generally what happens.
Hopefully not in a day like some have done.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah. All right. You got a pulled pork for us now?
I do. I have a pulled pork on childcare company G8. So the code for this one is GEM. They're recently on the buy list this week, so it's a new one, or well, even though it's down towards the bottom, but I thought they were large enough to be of interest to people.
Well, if that new, we...
Speaking of class action...
We hold it.
Sorry?
We hold it in a portfolio. It might actually be in my super. So it's been around for a while.
Well, you can delay the publication of this podcast while you sell it from your super if you're worried about
actually,
the curse of the pulled pork.
I added it to my super and also to one of the light portfolios towards the end of February, about a month ago. So it's up 1%, down 2%, depending on the portfolio. So, yeah. Okay. Be careful. Be careful what you say, Tony.
Okay.
Okay.
Actually, I thought it was new on the buy list this week, so apologies if it's been there recently. It was flagged as a new one this week, so maybe it came off and came back on.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. It's a Josephine, so be aware of that. It's not for buying today, but it's not that much of a Josephine that it can't be a buy in the next couple of days or the next few weeks. In researching it today, the first thing that jumped out was that they have settled a class action taken against them for raising funds after providing profit guidance that didn't turn out to be accurate. So just what we were talking about before. And I did think that might have been behind recent share price moves, but I think the price is actually about the same or down today, so maybe not. The good thing about the class action that was settled, and I'll read a bit about the class action just to round us out. This comes from the Financial Review today. G8 Education has settled a class action lawsuit for $46.5 million. Just weeks before a trial was due to start over the childcare giant having allegedly botched earnings forecasts. The settlement for Gold Coast-based G8, which has 430 centres under brands including Penguin Childcare and Casabaranka, I think it's pronounced, will hit shareholders despite the company having insurance. The net cash flow after tax and insurance would be $24.5 million, G8 said. Still, the company had early provided for such a payout, with the AFR last month highlighting it as much in their provisions. The provisions plus insurance meant that no further hits to profit were expected for this calendar year, the company said. Slater and Gordon had kicked off the case in November 2020 in Victoria's Supreme Court with a trial due next month. The action centred on whether G8 breached continuous disclosure obligations in May 2017 when, having raised $100 million, predicted 2017's calendar year earnings before interest and tax would be $170 million. The prediction fell short, with G8's final underlying EBIT figure hitting $156 million, and only in December that year did warn forecasts would be missed, partly due to a glut of centres and new staff break regulations, resulting in a shredding of the share price. So going back to what I said about Amcor before, they've reaffirmed their profit guidance, even though the CEO's resigned, so companies don't do it lightly, given that. But given the fact that they've settled the class action, so it's no longer hanging over the share price, and it's been settled for the amount they provided plus the insurance claim, I think that it's actually a bit of a good news story for G8 on that front anyway. So people will have realised from that little snippet there that G8 is a childcare provider around Australia, something like 430 centres in Australia. 45,000 children are looked after per week by this company, and they employ over 10,000 team members. So it's quite a large employer and quite a large company in the sector. A couple of things that have happened in the last few years. Being a childcare operator, it was hit pretty hard during the COVID outbreak with centres not being able to operate and difficulty getting staff in when they were able to operate. So, for example, their operating cash flow went from $189 million in December 2020 down to $75 in June 22, and then it's now back up to $201 million in its latest half-year results. So it did get hit pretty hard. The share price dropped from $2.80 down to 88 cents, sort of in that COVID time. So it took a big hit for that, and it's now working its way back. ADT for this company is $671 million. So it's pretty large for anyone who's interested in buying it. It has just posted good results. That could also be behind the increase in the share price in the last few months. Revenue was up 9%. Net profit after tax was up 53%, in fact. And they increased their dividend by 50%. So they're basically calling out the worst of the COVID times is over. And last year, they did call out they were having problems because of the cost of living issues. So families were dropping out from taking their kids to kindy, especially in hard-hit areas. So finding it hard to get staff. There's a bit of a hangover from COVID, I guess. And their supply chain costs were increasing. But that they seem to be coping with that. They did put their fees up last year, so that's to take into account those things. And the other thing they did in the last little while was to hire a new CEO. And I'll come back to him a bit later. As I said before, this company runs lots of different brands. Looks like as they acquire a childcare center or network, they keep the branding in place. So doesn't appear to be any G8 branding. It's various brands like Pelicans, Jelly Beans, Buggles, sort of names you expect for childcare centres, and there's lots of them. So what do the numbers tell us? I'm using a share price of $1.25, which is less than consensus target, but above IV1 of 38 cents and IV2 of 86 cents. The yield on this company is 3.6%, so even though it's gone up, it's still not meeting our checklist cutoff, so we can't score it for that. Stock Doctor Financial Health and Trend is strong and steady, which are both good. But I'll highlight the people who are interested. The company has a low ROE of 6.7%. Not that we score it for that, but it's a thing. PE for this company is reasonably high, 16.81, which is not the lowest because during the pandemic, the PE dropped to 12 times, so we can't score it for that. However, PropCap is 5 times, so plenty of cash being generated by the company, but it does have a reasonably high cost structure, which is why the PE is a little bit on the high side. Net equity per share for this company scores for us when we add 30% to it. So NEPS plus 30% is $1.45. Share price is $1.25, so we can score it for that. Interesting thing is that's net equity per share plus 30%, $1.45. Net tangible assets is slightly negative at 18 cents, negative 18 cents. So the history of this company is that it's been a roll-up. They have acquired all these various networks of childcare centres and individual childcare centres over time. And it's one of those things I've warned people about with roll-ups is that they go from being a growth stock to being, a value stock, to being like an operational-based stock or operationally focused stock, which seems to be the case now. They've just employed a new CEO who has quite a good career in retail. So managing large teams, managing remote locations and individual site outlets, that kind of thing. Throwing off lots of operating cash flow. They've been paying down debt, which is good. They've increased the dividend. So there was nothing in anything I read about the company that suggested they were about to take over another network of childcare centres. And in fact, they've been divesting their poor performing ones. So they plan to get rid of, I think it's 31 centres this year. So it looks like this has transitioned from a growth stock to a sort of business as usual stock with a focus on operational performance, which then brings it, I guess, more squarely into the sights of value investors rather than those looking for a hit to revenue by acquisition. But it does de-risk it for us because it probably means they won't be raising capital and we have to put in more money down the track, which often happens with roll-ups. And it also means that, you know, we get a better, I guess, from my point of view, we're getting a better look at the operations of the business because we're not having to decide whether the growth is coming from the sites that they've just bought or whether the costs are being, hurt because of the integration of new centres, all that kind of thing. That appears to be taking place. I didn't actually read anything to say that's what they were doing, but I also haven't seen any evidence to suggest they're still rolling up childcare centres. Back to the numbers. Earnings per share growth is forecast at 20%, which is good, but growth over PE is only 1.17, and I like to look for 1.5 times, so we can't score it for that. Company has no owner-founder. It has in the past, but they've gone, so we can't count it for that. So all in all, quality score is 8 out of 15 or 53%, and the QAV score is 0.11. So it's down towards the bottom of the buy list, but it is a large ADT stock. A lot of things to like, I thought, about this stock. Really the only sort of risk I could see, apart from the fact that they may change their mind and try and raise money and buy another network of centres, is that there's a lot of focus on the industry, and in particular from two ways. Is the government funding of childcare spaces enough? And secondarily, are the workers in the area being paid enough, care workers in the area being paid enough? So there's a productivity commission inquiry. There was an ACCC inquiry. There's various other state-level government inquiries going on. G8 say they're being proactive in engaging with all of these inquiries, but it could come out as a good thing or a bad thing. So it could come out recommending the government has to pay more in funding to keep childcare viable, or it could come out as a bad thing, that the childcare area has to pay more for wages, which would hurt its margins. So I saw that as a risk, but it may go either way. On the positive side, one of the things that the company calls out in its reporting is the percentage of women's participation in the workforce. And I know from Jenny's engagement with chief executive women over the years that they see childcare as a key way to get women to increase their hours in the workforce. And that makes sense to me. And this company sees it as well. And they've called out the fact that participation by females is still increasing. And that's a bit of a tailwind for this business. They also say the same thing about net migration, that boosts their enrolments too. And enrolments, but also utilization rate is the term for childcare centres, because again, you can have childcare centres, but if they're not running at a high utilization rate, they're a cost. So that's something else they focus on. But workforce participation by females and net migration are both going up, and they both help to support enrolments for this company. What else can I say about it? I wanted to just talk quickly about the CEO. He started, I think, at the end of last year. His name is Pejman Okhovat, O-K-H-O-V-A-T, and he's the ex-MD of Big W, has before been the CEO of the Warehouse Group in New Zealand, a big New Zealand sort of Kmart-like or Walmart-like retailer, and had a career in the UK at M&S, Marks and Spencers, Sainsbury's, and Asda Walmart. So they've picked a very experienced operational retailer to run this company, not someone with childcare experience, I grant, but somebody used to, working with slim margins and utilization rates and all that kind of thing. So it does make me think that they're going to be more operationally focused going on. So they're all the positives about the company. And it scores well for us. So I think it's worth people having a look at G8 Education.
There you go, Jim. Just wait until it has its pulled pork curse, gets through that, and the other side. Buy it on the dip. Buy it on the pulled pork.
I'm going to refer you to the sensitive training book that you've got. And I also point out, I think I did a pulled pork on KSC a number of years ago too, which has done well.
Yeah, but it's gone through the dip and come back out the other side,
Oh, has it?
Yeah, okay. Too many people sell on the pulled pork. Thank you for that, Tony. You talk about other acquisitions. I feel like the childcare center industry has been going through roll-ups for 15 years. Is there anything left to roll up? Haven't they all been rolled up?
No, quite possibly, yeah.
Wasn't it Eddie somebody or other?
Eddie Groves,
yeah. That was years ago.
Yes. Had one of the best mullets on the ASX, Eddie Groves. The Bogan from Brisbane, he was dubbed.
What's he up to these days, I wonder?
Oh, I don't know. I imagine he's not in the Bahamas or anything like that, because he went bankrupt back then.
It's the best place to be, you go bankrupt. Yeah, just
in Brisbane.
Yeah. It just feels like one of those things that I've been hearing about, childcare center roll-ups forever. Yeah.
And quite possibly this company's not doing any more roll-ups because there's no more to roll up. So that's entirely possible.
All been rolled.
You'll be rolled, that's right.
So it could be mergers, I guess, with other big networks.
Well, I think from memory there's only two now. There's G8, that I know of anyway. There could be some more. And there was one that bought Eddie Groves' company out of administration, but it was set up by a consortium of charities. I think Evan Thornley was involved. Mm. And potentially some of the unions for the workers in the sector. Mm. And I think they've been reasonably successful as well since then, but they're not listed.
Mm. All right. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Cam. Happy ASX.
And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., sign up for the 2-week free trial and check all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style, but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. Check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/light, LIGHT. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right, have a great week and good luck with your investing. The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions.